And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Hello, everyone. Today is Wednesday, December 14th. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Gino. I'm here with Kevin. I'm here with Darren. You can listen to us any way you get your podcasts. Like, subscribe, follow us on Facebook, send us posts, thoughts, questions. Talk to us. We want to talk to you. Today, we're going to talk to you about some sports. We're going to start with some football. NFL is deep into the regular season. We're starting to get a clearer picture of the playoffs. Last week, week 14, was not a good week for New York. Both Jets and Giants lost. They lost to the leaders in their own division. And that's where we're going to start. We're going to start in Buffalo. Jets lose to Buffalo 20-12. Buffalo moves to 10-3. Jets move to 7-6. Buffalo wins their fourth straight. Josh Allen had a decent game, 16 for 147 with a touchdown. He ran for 47 yards and a touchdown. Bam Knight had a touchdown. Mike White was good, not great, 27 for 44, 268. Guys, let's get it going with the Jets. Kev, what do you got?
Mike White's my hero. To take that beating and take a spear to the ribs like he did. And come back, yeah, x-rays. Yeah, they're fine. Nothing looks broken or anything. All right, let's get back in there. If that doesn't rally a team, if that doesn't secure him as QB1 for the rest of the year, I don't know what will. He played a solid game. The conditions, especially the first half, seemed to be worse than the second half. Seemed to be windier, a little bit more of the frozen rain, snow, sleet, whatever it was. They played him even for a half. And then the first of the three big mistakes, C.J. Mosley, I don't know what he was doing besides showing off his ninja skills or something. I don't know. That was just a ridiculous play there. Let the Bills continue the drive, come down, get that touchdown before the half. Third quarter, the first time White comes out, Joe Flacco comes in. Oh, I know we have protection problems on that offensive line. And Joe Flacco's a statue back there, but he's got to feel that pressure. He's got to get rid of that ball. He can't hold it. Strip sack, fumble, recovered by Buffalo. They score again. And then the third big mistake was the Michael Carter fumble. As they were driving down, they were getting the drive going. Mike White had come back in, rallying the troops, and that fumble just killed any chance they had of winning. So to me, it's two straight weeks on the road against two of the better teams in the league. Both of them are 10-3 now. Two games where they showed up, they played. Unfortunate they couldn't win them. But again, the effort, you can't fault the effort by the Jets, especially Mike White. And that becomes easy. They have to win at least three of the four games remaining to have any chance for the playoffs. Darren?
Mike White was courageous. I thought he was great, actually, in a lot of ways. I know the stats may not show it, but I really thought he was excellent in the game. A couple things. The Michael Carter fumble was inexcusable. I don't know why we're getting a little feedback here, but Michael Carter fumble was a little bit inexcusable. And to be honest, both times when White got hurt, it was right after a nice play, and they both became drive killers because then you bring in Flacco. And Flacco throws an incompletion to a wide-open receiver. First throw, I get it behind Conklin, where they were moving the ball, and all of a sudden it's a third and long, and nothing happens. And the next time he steps up, doesn't release it, gets sacked, stripped. He's a statue. He's freaking awful. The Michael Carter fumble, you know, I mean, to be honest, it's like almost he's kind of regressed as the year has gone on. He's been less effective. He hasn't been as elusive as you would expect. You know, Bam looks pretty good. It's really hard not to like him as your full-time running back. Like we said last week, I don't need to see Robinson anymore. I don't need to trade the fifth-round pick. I'm happy with Bam. Yeah, Kev.
Yeah, I think this felt like it was the worst game for both Michael Carters, actually. I thought they both played poorly.
Yeah, well, and that was the worst game that the slot corner had. He had a couple of mistakes, a couple of penalties. Did not look sharp. I agree.
We've been very fortunate for a year and a half or more. These two guys have stepped up. Mid-round draft picks for both of them, and they've been very solid contributors for a year and a half. just a bad time to pick for having both of them having a bad game.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. The other thing that, again, I watch this team every week, and as you do, and as a lot of us do, I do see a need for us to really, I mean, we just paid all this money for Laken Tomlinson, and he's not blowing anybody off the line. And you know what? And the loss of Vera Tucker is very obvious because Herbig is not nearly the player. And I don't love McGovern. I just don't. I'm used to the Jets having nothing good about their team but a premier center. And right now we don't have one. We have an average center that occasionally pulls and makes a play. But the Michael Carter fumble inside the 20, it's like, come on. Mike White played relatively well. Garrett Wilson looks really good. Elijah Moore was involved in the game. Conklin looked decent. Zoma looked fine. A lot of good things with the team. Playing against a better team, they were in it. They didn't win it. But I disagree with you on one thing. I almost think we have to win out to get into the playoffs, because when I look at the schedules of other teams in the AFC, and we'll get into that a little deeper, they're going to need some help. And I don't think that you can rely on the help against some of the matchups that the Chargers and Dolphins have. Yeah.
I was going to say, it was the Chargers that scared me more. I think Miami's got at least two losses on there, assuming one of them is to the Jets.
Well, yeah, we need that one. And you feel like this game this week on Saturday night against Buffalo could be the other game.
Yep.
Overall, not disappointed in the effort, but disappointed in the result. G?
And I'll ask this to you two Jet fans. Is this run a year early? You know, this run, this push to the playoffs, this run, is this a year too early?
I wouldn't say year too early, but it's definitely a year ahead of what I think Darren and I both thought. We thought they'd be, you know, eight wins at the high end. 8-9 season, maybe get a break, go 9-8. Neither one of us thought they'd be in the playoff picture.
Yeah, the one thing I'll say is that none of us thought that Mike White was our quarterback when we started the season, right? So you go through it, you think Breece Hall, you're hoping, but week one was really all Michael Carter, if we remember correctly.
Yeah.
Breece got very few carries, right? Garrett Wilson kind of came alive. We stole game two, right? So you got Flacco wasn't very good in 1-3. He really wasn't very good in game two. The only reason why he got saved is because they forgot to cover Corey Davis on a bomb, recovered an onside kick, and Flacco had his only good 2 minutes of the season. And he let him down the field. I mean, I'm not saying he's awful, but he wasn't really good. And then Zach was 5-2, but it was a 5-2 against teams that we're not supposed to beat, but teams that we're able to win. And his mistakes were kind of minimized. He wasn't throwing interceptions. He was just throwing the ball away. Now that we go to White, you feel like you have a guy that knows when to release the ball. Zach seemed like he held it a little too long. The O-line, the tackles at least are back. You know, you got Fanta on one side. You got Brown on the other. I mean, they weren't your two starters in those spots. When they started the season, it was going to be Becton. When it started preseason, I should say. But it didn't work out that way. So now you have at least two tackles. You lost your one guard. Your other guard that you spent all this money on hasn't done anything. Center's average at best. You lost Hall during the year. With everything that's happened with this team offensively, because the defense has stayed relatively healthy until Quinnen got hurt this week, which is definitely a nervous thing for us going forward. You can't not be happy with where we are. And probably you're right, G. It's probably a year ahead of the schedule we thought. We thought we could be a playoff team next year. Right now we're looking at who's the quarterback next year. Wilson just got promoted to QB2, which I'm thankful for, because putting Flacco in just scares the hell out of me. Nothing against Flacco. He's old. He just can't do it anymore. It's just it. Yeah, Kev.
2 points for me and one. Quinnen, hopefully, I know it's 50-50 this week. Hopefully, at worst, it's a one-week injury. Buffalo scored all 20 points after he went out.
Very true.
Number two, at least with Zach as your backup, when he goes into the game, you know if he's under pressure, he'll at least be able to escape and maybe make something happen, or at least get rid of the ball, throw it away, something, and not do anything stupid. He's not a statue back there. Maybe he can make a play.
And if he gets hurt against Detroit, you could throw on him.
Yeah.
All right. Well, listen, we'll talk about it when we talk about some of the playoffs in a little bit. But they're 7-6 after 13 games. There's four left. They're right now the 7 teams get in. So they're right on
the nine.
They're nine?
They're
nine. Behind the Chargers.
They're behind the Chargers.
They're tied, G, but they're nine, technically.
Right. Okay.
I thought the Giants were the much uglier story than the Jets this week because at home against their team, they didn't show up.
Let's talk about the Giants. So they lose. They basically get destroyed. Philadelphia wins 48-22. Philadelphia moves to 12-1. The Giants are 7-5-1. Hurts continues his run for the MVP. Threw two touchdowns, 217 yards passing. Sanders had two touchdowns on the ground. Hurts had a touchdown. Scott had a touchdown. Barkley was 9 rushes for 28 yards. And we keep saying it every week. Stop Barkley. You're going to stop the Giants 9 times out of 10. And that's what happened. But the Giants just got completely outplayed. There was nothing going on in that whole game. Philadelphia was in control from the beginning. Darren?
It was funny. I mean, again, just like Kev will say to you, I watched a lot more of the Jet game than I watched of the Giant game. There was one pass play that pretty much told the whole story. There was a play where the safety was coming over. Devontae, what's his last name? Is running the little fly pattern down the right side. They throw it up. The safety's right there to pick it off. The corner kind of stops. They both stop, gets caught, walks in for a touchdown. Devontae Smith. Sorry, I couldn't think of it. I had Scott in my head for some reason. You know, and I knew it wasn't right. That's where the Giants just didn't show. I mean, at home in a big game, a little fight, a little something. Listen, I know Philly's diverse. I know Philly can do a lot of things. But what I'm going to say is that I feel as though if both teams are healthy, San Francisco's still the better squad just because I think their defense is better. But Philly can do a lot of things. And I'm not a believer in Jalen Hurts throwing the ball up. I think he gets a lot of one-on-one coverage. I think he's like Lamar Jackson. I really do. I think that Lamar Jackson has a lot of playoff wins, right? None. And I don't know what we're going to see from Hurts. Maybe he's going to run the table and win a Super Bowl. Might be wrong. But he gets a lot of one-on-one coverage because they don't know if he's going to run, hand it off, or throw. And that's the new NFL right now. But you can't argue with the success of this team. They're peaking right now. The only question I have for the Eagles, are they peaking a little early? Because right now, the last couple of weeks, they've looked unstoppable.
Could be.
Are they right now looking so good? I mean, because early on they were winning games, but they were leaving teams in the games. You know, they weren't finishing. They were scoring 24, 22, 27.
You're right.
I'm not saying those are bad scores. Nope. But now they're just annihilating the Titans. They're annihilating the Giants. On the road, you're like, wow. I mean, they look like world beaters at this point.
They do.
And you just hope – well, I'm not a Philly fan, but if you're an Eagle fan, you just hope that this is just – that they're just head and shoulders above everybody and not just peaking so soon where everything is going right. And the first sign of adversity in a playoff game, they won't know what to do with themselves at home. But, you know, the Giants, you know, like you just said, G, Barkley doesn't run the ball. They don't do much. When you fall behind that much, you can't run the ball to Barkley. They have no receivers. Daniel Jones is not a guy you can rely on completely to win the game. And it shows. Nothing against what Dable has done, because I think the Giants are ahead of schedule. Listen, technically the Giants – are still in the playoffs.
Yep.
The Giants, they have a half-game lead over Seattle, who's falling like a stone. So you know, the Giants can still make the playoffs with what they have, but they're a very flawed team right now. Kev?
Yeah, I made it – because it was Giants-Eagles, I wanted to make more of an effort to watch that game. And especially in that first half, Darren, where the Jets and Bills punted the first 10 times, a little easier to – a little easier to go flip to that game. And every time flipped on, here's Philadelphia making another play. It was 21-0. At that point, you go, no point in flipping back to that anytime soon.
It was over.
Yeah. And, you know, you check back, see the score. Yeah, the Giants still haven't got back in the game. All right, flip back to the Jets. But that you can't be non-competitive at home in this crucial of a game. As you're trying to make a playoff push, just a bad performance by the Giants. And there's no other way to put it.
Listen, they're 7-5-1. They had two early wins that could have been losses very easily. So you know they're 7-5-1. They're the sixth seed. Washington's a 5 seed right now. They're tied. Seattle's a half game back. We'll see how this plays out. It's going to come down to a couple of games here and there now. They're going to play at Washington this week, and we'll see. We'll see where this starts. You know, we're going to see if for the Giants, if that's the start of the push forward or the rolling further back. Darren? Yeah,
we know that. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
We know that they're going to be writing that last playoff picture. Imagine their season if their playoff spot came down to the fact that they went for two back in week one against Tennessee.
You know, but that
play could be the difference between making and not making the playoffs.
Well, here's the thing. You look at the Giants' last four games, right, at Washington. So now the loser of this game is two games technically behind the other because you lose the tiebreaker, right?
Yep.
Then at Minnesota, home for Indy, at Philly. Now, again, we don't know what Philly needs that last game. But you also know that they have a bye most likely that week, the week after. So they're going to play their starter somewhat. They're not going to give him a three-week hiatus, you know, and they're going to play him at least for a half. But you start off with at Washington, at Minnesota. So the Giants, you know, have to kind of come out strong. Seattle has a difficult schedule too a little bit. Detroit's still in the race. You know, there's a lot of little things happening in the NFC and even more so in the AFC.
Yeah.
I think if you're the Giant fan, you're sitting there going, okay, at Washington this week, of course, a winnable game. At Minnesota doesn't scare you.
No.
They can play with Minnesota. Then they've got what Colts, you said?
Yep. Colts at home is the only game you sit there and circle and say, we got this.
Yeah. But you could see them getting two or three wins in the next three games.
I could also see them going 1-3. I mean,
so can I.
I can see them only winning the Colt game.
Yeah,
or
exactly.
I can see them stealing the Viking game, you know?
Yeah.
You could also, I mean, listen, if they beat Washington, pretty much they're in the playoffs. I mean, it's really hard not to imagine because what Seattle has to face. Seattle still has to go to Kansas City. Seattle has the Jets, which is no pushover. And this week they go to San Francisco. I'm sorry. The only easy game is the Rams. And if you look at what the Rams did last week against the Raiders, not that the Raiders are anything special, but Baker had a 98-yard drive to win the damn game. So, you know, the Rams aren't giving up is my point. Yep. So, you know, Seattle has an interesting schedule. Washington, you know, just while we're on it, we might as well polish it off. Washington's last four, they have the Giants, then they go to San Francisco.
Yep.
Then they host Cleveland and host Dallas, right? Yep. So in that schedule, you sit there and say they can go 2-2, they can go 3-1, they can go 1-3 also. Because the only game you feel like they should definitely win is the Cleveland game.
Yep.
But is Watson playing better at that point? Is Cleveland kind of trying to – I mean, it's really kind of all over the place right now. And the last team is Detroit that's still in that playoff. I'll just give them that nod because they're 6-7.
Yep.
They're at the Jets, which is definitely a winnable game. At Carolina, who's now suddenly resurgent in the Big Ten West, as we called all year long, now known as the NFC South. The Chicago Bears at home and the Packers at home. So, wow, it's like, you know, schedule favors probably go to Detroit, but they're still a game and a half back. So the winner of the Giant Commander game is in, and then the other three teams are fighting for one spot.
I would agree with you.
Who knew Detroit Carolina will have that many playoff implications?
Well, listen, while we're there, let's just finish up the NFC and we'll go to the AFC real quick. So we go to the NFC West South, right? Because it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So Tampa Bay hosts Cincinnati this week. Then they're at Arizona, host Carolina at Atlanta, right? So you figure the Cincinnati game's a tough one this week. You're not saying that they're going to lose, but Carolina hosts Pittsburgh. If Carolina beats Pittsburgh and Tampa Bay loses to Cincinnati, they're tied with Carolina having the tiebreaker presently. And all of a sudden, Brady's looking on the outside, looking in, and Kevin's smiling ear to ear like he's never rooted for the Carolina Panthers before, right?
And if that happens, Tampa at that point is 6-8, by the way.
They're both 6-8, right?
They're both 6-8.
Well, now, Tampa gets Cincinnati, then at Arizona, which is winnable, host Carolina. So that's going to be probably the determination of this. And then they still go to Atlanta, who's still only one game behind. So they're in the race, and Atlanta has the toughest schedule. They go to New Orleans, then they go to Baltimore, host Arizona, who seems to be everywhere, and then they host Tampa Bay. The Saints, who are two games out, still can't technically be out of it. They host Atlanta, they head to Cleveland, head to Philly, which you don't like their chances, and then they host Carolina. If any one of these teams goes 3-1, they're going to win the damn South.
You got to figure though, if New Orleans
and host the playoff game, by the way.
If New Orleans loses to the Falcons this week, they're probably done at that point.
Done.
They're probably done. Everybody else is still in it at that point, because then Atlanta goes to 6 wins, and then we got to see what happens with Tampa and Carolina this week. But, yeah, it's going to be chaos in that division, let me tell you.
On Monday, December 5th, with 3 minutes to go to the game, in the game, New Orleans looked like they were in great shape. And what you do when you play against a team that has a little luck that goes on their side just because they know how to play like Tampa Bay does, and you lead by 13, you know in the back of your mind if you're a mediocre to less than mediocre team, you're going to find a way to lose by one. You just know you are. As a Jet fan, how many times did we feel it? We're up 13. It's not enough. If we're up 14, at least I feel like we're going to overtime. We're at 13, we're going to lose by one. We always thought that. That's what you think when you're a losing team, Kev.
Do the Raiders feel the same way after the last Thursday?
Well, yeah, because let's be honest, the Raiders basically just gave away their playoff opportunity last week. It's over now. I think they need too much help.
It's funny. It was the same exact story. Down 13, the quarterback leads them on 2 straight drives to win the game.
It's amazing, right? So now let's go to the AFC while we're on a roll here.
So let's stick with the NFC a minute. So
okay, you got something else. Sorry, bud.
That's okay. So you got Philadelphia as the 1, Minnesota as the 2, San Francisco as the 3. The NFC South winner is the 4 at the moment.
Big Ten West. Okay.
Okay. The 5 is probably Dallas. Yep. And then the 6 and 7 are up for grabs, right?
Well, the 6 is I think the 6 will be the winner of the game between the Giants and Washington.
Okay.
I really think that team gets the 6. I think that tie helps them out in the way this whole thing is going with mediocrity. It just does. I think the winner, and they have a 2-game lead over the other team they're playing. Detroit's still a game back, and Seattle seems like they're floundering after they lost to Carolina last week, where Carolina not only beat them, but really kind of controlled that game.
They
were a better team.
I said this to a Giant fan at work when Washington and the Giants tied that week. And I said, you know, if things break right, that time may actually help us more than you think.
I think you're right.
Because what happens is that now they don't have that other loss that Seattle has, and they're ahead.
Right.
Now, I do agree with you, though. One of these teams is going to have a difficult time if they lose this week, whether it's Washington or the Giants. I think you're right. I think the winner of that game probably winds up making it, and the loser is going to have a hard time because – if Seattle or Detroit have anything left in the tank to get there, that the losing team this week is going to have a hard time because they have some hard games on their schedule, both the Giants and Washington. So we'll see.
Well, you got Philly and you got Dallas, who are 2 good teams in your division that they have on their schedules. And for some strange reason, Minnesota and San Francisco on the road, each one of them finds that matchup a week after their Sunday night game. It's just, this is what you want. You want playoff races. You want chaos. If it's your team, you don't want it. You want to be comfortably in, as like we'll talk about the AFC with the Jets soon. But, and, you know, right now, that's really what we said.
And Seattle at 7-6, mm-hmm. You know, they are 0-4 against the NFC South. So, I mean, if they don't make the playoffs, that's what they're going to look at. They went 0-4 against probably one of the worst divisions in football right now.
Probably.
You know, so.
You could have skipped that word and had the whole statements right. Kev, one of the worst divisions of – one the worst division of football, probably.
I'd say probably one of the worst in history. Yeah. Might be a better
It's bad football. I mean, Tom Brady getting turned off, taken off of network television because his team is getting embarrassed like they were on Sunday. When they're trying to show, oh, Brady's back home in San Francisco, and look at all the people they got. He went against Brock Purdy in his first start, and they got slammed. Tampa Bay is wow. I always thought that Todd Bowles wasn't a great coach, but he's showing it. He's proving it for us.
And we talked about how the Giants were never in that game against Philly. Tampa Bay never in the game against San Francisco this week.
I mean, not at
any point were they in this game.
And Geno Smith, by the way, showed who Geno Smith is. He can throw the ball around, but he's not great either. I know his stats have started off really strong, but, you know, at San Francisco, at Kansas City the next 2 weeks, these are not easy games. And then they get the Jets at home. I mean, you know, they have 3 tough games too, Seattle.
You know, and I want to bring up a point you made a couple weeks ago, Darren. Detroit getting back Jameson Williams.
Love that kid.
He's fast. And you know what? Okay,
he's the best receiver in the draft, and we love Garrett Wilson. I'll just put it that way. And Olave is good too.
Detroit's defense is not great. They're probably good, but
think they're good.
This offense with these receivers between Amon-Ra St. Brown and Williams and Chark, and having Swift running around, and I mean,
this Reynolds is really good too, by the way. Reynolds,
I mean, this is a pretty good, and the other Williams, the running back, James Jamal. Williams, yep. I mean, Jamal, they have, it's a pretty good offense. I mean, they took care of Minnesota this week. You know, Minnesota could have went to 11-2, could have been pushing Philadelphia for the one, but now after that loss, they probably are not going to push unless.
Well, they lost the head-to-head also, so they're really three games back.
Yeah.
You know, I agree with you. I mean, It's Detroit's offense is good. Their defense isn't great. The O-line is okay. Sewell seems to be coming on. The thing that the Jets play them this week, the thing the Jets are going to have to do is, even with or without Quinnen, they're going to have to find a way to pressure Goff. If you can pressure Goff, we can win the game. If we don't pressure Goff, it's going to be a long day. And it's going to be a long day for them on defense too, but it's going to be a long day for us as well.
All right.
If Quinnen doesn't play, we might have to send the extra guy. More than we have in this year.
To me, I move Franklin Myers inside. I kind of keep Huff a little bit more. You watched the game with Romo last week doing the game. And if you're a Jet fan and he's going through the players, and rightfully so, a lot of great draft picks. It's like he didn't watch one game all year. He didn't mention Clemens at all, the defensive end. And he was out last week. But the kid's been outstanding. Yeah. He's a 6th-round pick that's been outstanding. He's probably been better than Jermaine, who had the blocked punt for the safety, blocked the 2 hardest Kev Texas.
I know.
But and we all thought it, but we wanted a touchdown there. But you know, we have a lot of weapons at the end position. If we can move Franklin Myers inside with Solomon Torres and Rankins and kind of rotate with Vinnie Curry and the 4 of them, find a way. And just use Huff a little bit more, because when Huff's in the game, he makes things happen. Yeah. And, you know, if Clemens is back and then you have Williams and you have obviously Lawson, all of a sudden you still have 8 solid defensive linemen. And yes, we're missing our best lineman, but it's something that can be made up for a game or two.
Let's stick with the AFC. So right now you got the Bills 1, Kansas City 2, Baltimore 3. Tennessee 4, Cincinnati 5, Miami 6, New England 7, and then you got the Jets and the Chargers right behind them, and then everybody else is kind of is 2 games behind them. So that's where we stand right now. The Chargers look like they're trying to gain something, trying to get some giddy up in their step. Mike Williams and Keenan Allen running around will definitely help Justin Herbert. We saw that. Turns out that pick in fantasy football, Darren, that I made on Herbert wasn't so bad, except he had no receivers, so he really was doing nothing for a while. But what do you guys think about the AFC playoff picture?
Start up, Kev.
So yeah, the Chargers, now that, like you said, Allen and Williams are back healthy, that's got to scare you. And you look at the schedule they have left, there's a good chance they go 4-0. There's a real good chance they go 4-0.
They host Tennessee. They're at Indy. They host the Rams and the Broncos.
Yeah.
Yeah. The only bad thing for them is that their home field is not a home field.
No. So that puts them in good position.
Kev, their defense is not as bad as people make it out to be.
No.
They don't stop the run well.
Yeah.
But when they get Bosa back, they're a different team.
Absolutely. Go ahead, Kev.
You look at New England, they've got the Raiders this week, winnable game. Then they're Cincinnati, Miami, and at Buffalo. So 3 real tough games there. So I'm not sold on Mac Jones. I could see New England losing at least 2 of those games. So that sort of knocks them back. Then I think you're looking at Miami as a 3rd team in there. I'm thinking of the Jets perspective that you've got to knock off these teams. And you look at Miami's schedule, and they've got
– they're at Jets. Buffalo. They're at Buffalo, Green Bay, at New England, and then the Jets.
Yep. So the Jets have to win that game. And if Miami goes up to Buffalo and loses, that gives the Jets a chance to get the tie break on Miami. Now, did I hear right? I know there's a meme that was floating around. Miami had propane heaters in L.A. at the night game.
I didn't hear that, so you got me.
I seen a meme about this saying Miami brought heaters to L.A. for the game. What are they going to do when it's -7 and snowing up in Buffalo this weekend?
you're 100% right.
I mean, if they're going to think of that way, they've got no chance in this game. I think the last 2 weeks, too, has been exposed a little bit. You said it all year, Darren, you don't think Tua is that good. I agree with you. You know, he throws a lot of the lollipop passes. And I think teams are starting to figure out that, hey, you can play defense against Miami. They beat up on some of their soft schedule earlier, and they're not that impressive.
So what is the keys? Thing,
though. I'm sorry. Go ahead, G.
Sorry. One of the keys for them is, and I heard it. Another defensive coordinator on one of the stations talking about this, and that is the best way to play Tua is to clog up the middle, because when you clog up the middle on him, he has trouble throwing deep to the sides. And what it does is it upsets his whole rhythm on how to get the pass, how to get the ball out. And that's exactly what they said the Chargers did this week, is that they clogged up the middle, and those 10-yard passes, he's 8 yards behind the line of scrimmage throwing it, so it's 18-yard passes. And when he's got to throw it to the sidelines, they're actually 30-yard passes, and apparently that's where he has a big problem. So, Darren, sorry to interrupt you, buddy.
No. I mean, here's the thing. When you look at Miami, right, their last four games, and we talked about it, at Buffalo, Green Bay, at New England, the Jets, these are four teams that can all get after the quarterback. All right? I mean, that's the thing. Miami's O-line, nothing special, okay? Miami's defense hasn't been special. They've been better at home. But the reason they've been better at home is because they've been jumping on people, and then they're sitting there just playing pass D the whole game. So it's a little bit of a different feel. But now Buffalo is going to get after Tua, and it's going to be cold, and it's going to be wet, and it's going to be ugly. It could be – what were they saying? Definite snow, I think, is scheduled, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Great for my fantasy start with Josh Allen, but, you know, it is what it is. Green Bay doesn't do a lot of things well on offense, but defensively they still get after the quarterback. New England, you know – Is going to be a team that's going to – Belichick, much as I hate him, is going to find a way to make it very uncomfortable for Tua to play well. It's going to force him to run. And the Jets can also get after him. So that's really what we're kind of banking on here. Because you look at the Jets, right? Here's what the Jets have. They have Detroit, Jacksonville, at Seattle, at Miami, right? Now, Detroit's resurgent and everything like that. But the fact that the Jets are a pick'em or a one-point choice at home is a little surprising to me. I think that we're a better team than Detroit all around. Jacksonville played really well last week, but I still think the Jets are a better team than Jacksonville is completely right now. Seattle is showing a lot of flaws. The way Carolina went in there and really ran the ball kind of makes me feel pretty good about the way we play. So I feel like we can compete with Seattle in Seattle. And then it's going to come down to that last game of the season. And, you know, I mean, at this rate, it's got a shot of being the flex game. That or Cincinnati-Baltimore, which you would think would be the flex game, by the way. I'm not an idiot. I mean, I know that we're the second choice. Don't get me wrong. Unless one of these two teams falls apart because Jackson isn't playing. But the Jets' schedule is not easy, but it's not difficult either. It's every game's winnable. You know what I mean? That's the key to this whole thing. So
every game's losable.
It is, but that's the way the NFL is, though. I mean, listen, yeah. I mean, you said New England at Las Vegas, and that's a winnable game. It is, but it's also an easily winnable game for Vegas. Yeah. Vegas, I mean, they're going to make Derek Carr beat them. If Derek Carr can beat them, then the Raiders will win. And I don't think that New England is going to be that great offensively against Vegas. Cincinnati is definitely a tough game. Hosting Miami is a toss-up. And then going to Buffalo last game of the season, if Buffalo – is playing for home field, which you figure they have to be at that point.
Yeah.
They're going to be playing for that game. So there's a lot out there. I mean, the Chargers, the game they play this week against Tennessee, not an easy game for them because they don't stop the run. So if there's a game where Derrick Henry could go off, this is the team he can do it against. It really is. So, I mean, Tranquil's an okay middle linebacker, but he's not special. I mean, you know, their defensive tackles aren't great. Their pressure is the ends. They got Mack on one side and Bosa on the other when Bosa's playing. So now all of a sudden, you know, Derwin James, who knows if he's back next week? Who really knows? So not that Tennessee does a lot, but Derwin James does a lot, covering tight ends, stuff like that. At Indy, you figure that they win. The Rams is the battle for the stadium. They're better than the Rams, but who the heck knows in that because it's a rivalry, and then you figure they're better than Denver. So we need the Chargers to lose this one when I look at the schedule. Yeah. I mean, that's what you look at. And the other race in the AFC right now is Cincinnati-Baltimore. Cincinnati seems like the better team right now when I'm watching them play. They seem like they're clicking.
I agree.
Yeah. Baltimore's playing without Jackson, so it's easy to bypass them a little bit. But Cincinnati goes to Tampa, goes to New England, hosts Buffalo, hosts Baltimore. Four relatively challenging games, you know. Baltimore heads to Cleveland, hosts Atlanta, hosts Pittsburgh, and then heads to Cincinnati. Schedule much easier, you know what I mean?
You know, Baltimore with Dobbins back this week, they look like they could run the ball a lot better. Between Dobbins and Edwards both being healthy at the same time, I mean, it's crazy that these two haven't been healthy at the same time. And I don't know what they said, but it was something like 20-something games. I mean, Dobbins was 15 for 120 with a touchdown. If he's going to do that, Baltimore's going to have a strength now that they can hang their hat on other than Jackson, because up until that, they haven't been able to. Kev?
Well, it's if they have a quarterback.
Correct.
And Huntley, we've seen Huntley the last couple of years. He's done a nice job filling in for Jackson. He gives Baltimore a chance to win, but he was hurt last week too. Yeah. And they were down to I know I had it written down here.
I'm blanking.
Anthony Brown.
Yep.
Was their third string quarterback who's in. If they're stuck starting Brown this week, boy, they're in trouble.
Well, then that schedule looks a lot harder.
Yeah.
At Cleveland, where you know that that's always a rivalry because of you know, just the way the division, the way it's always been. The other thing to watch in this division is Buffalo's schedule not easy also, right? Buffalo has Miami at Chicago, at Cincinnati, and New England, right? So Kansas City, this can still go through Kansas City, which is weird, right? Because Kansas City lost a 3-point game at Cincinnati, and everybody has written them off like they're a horrible team now, which is funny. 2 weeks ago, Mahomes is the MVP. Now all of a sudden, I don't know if Kansas City is any good, right? Kansas City goes to Houston. They host Seattle and Denver, and then they head to Vegas, okay? Not saying they're going to run the table, but they can easily run the table, right? Yes. And all of a sudden, you're looking at a team that's going to be 14-3, all right? Now, Buffalo slips up once, and Kansas City will be the home team, and everything goes to Arrowhead again. I know everybody wants to write them off. I mean, yes, they had the brutal last-second loss to the Colts on the road in a game that they dominated. They lost a very close game at home to Buffalo by a field goal, and they lost a field goal game at Cincinnati. So it's not like they've been dominant. I think they lost three games by a total of 8 points. You know, and everybody's like, oh, they're just not very good. And I told you last week when we were making the picks, I'm like, Denver always gives Kansas City trouble. They don't beat them ever, but they always make the games closer than they should be. And, you know, Mahomes struggled a little bit against that press defense, but I think this is going to end up going through Kansas City again. I think Buffalo will slip up at least once in these games. Just a thought. Buffalo doesn't look as dominant. Since Allen got hurt with that UCL, he doesn't look as – he runs hard still. They don't look as dominant. And and Diggs was completely taken out of the game last week. Completely taken out of the game.
Is that partly the Jets' cornerbacks?
Oh, it's partly.
Absolutely.
And it's partly the pass rush. Don't get me wrong, but you know other teams have corners too. You know it's not like they're going up against Miami, so he's going to have Howard this week. You know Chicago's the winnable game on the road. At Cincinnati becomes a little bit of a challenge, and New England you never know. So a lot going on.
Yep.
You know the one team I just want to call to your attention that is. If Jacksonville had one more win, okay, and they right now they have 5, Tennessee has 7. If they had one more win, you could see them getting in. But because they're now 2 games back, it's really difficult. Tennessee almost would have to basically blow all of their games that they have left. So Tennessee has the Chargers, then they have Houston, Dallas, and then Jacksonville. Jacksonville has Dallas, the Jets, and Houston. So they're both playing Dallas, they're both playing Houston, and Tennessee has the Chargers, Jacksonville has the Jets, and then they play each other in Week 18. If they had one more win and they were only one game back, that last game of the season could really mean something. But being two games back, I just think it's going to be really difficult for them to make two games up at this point. So,
well, right now, Tennessee's in a free fall. This is a game that the Titans need. Because there's no saying that you know, you can certainly see the Titans going 1-2 in this stretch, and Jacksonville having a shot of going 2-1, and then that's a win-to-take-all game for the division, and that's the flex game. You know, there's a lot of exciting things going on here with the flex on the last week.
Yeah,
I agree with you though, G. I think the two games makes it really hard, just because the first game is against Dallas, even though it's home. Dallas played like crap last week against Houston. You have to imagine they're going to come out firing. I would have to think. I mean, I'm not saying it's a lot, but I'm not sold on Jacksonville's defense. Henry rushed for 98 yards in the first half, really nothing in the second half. But I think they stopped running the ball for some strange reason. You can run on Jacksonville. You can throw on Jacksonville. Jacksonville's defense is not great. Lawrence is showing that he's going to be pretty good, I think, though.
Oh, I think so, too. And I think a healthy, completely healthy Travis Etienne makes a difference. And although he's playing, I got a feeling that he's not completely healthy. I mean, guys play with injuries all the time, but I just don't think he's completely healthy right now. Anything else on the NFL, guys?
I think we covered a lot. We went 41 minutes on this thing here.
How about some baseball?
Sure.
Mets going nuts with free agents, huh? Verlander, Quintana, Senga, Robertson, Raley, Nimmo. I mean, they're going all over the place right now. Yankees still waiting on whether or not they're signing Rodon. Reports today on Twitter were all over the map saying that they're far away, but in a lot of these cases, it's far away, and then all of a sudden it gets done the next day, so I don't go by that so much. But since last week, we saw some big signings. We saw Bogaerts sign with San Diego. Yesterday, we saw Correa sign with the Giants. Darren, anything you want to throw out there?
A couple of interesting ones. First and foremost, before I get into the things that signed, I read an article today about the Braves maybe trading Fried, and I was like, I laughed my butt off. I'm like, why in the world would they ever think about doing that? That's beside the point. Now we're down to just a few free agents that are really major that are left. I mean, Danby Swanson is obviously going to be the guy that they want. He's going to be the guy everybody's going after. Nimmo's re-signed, Kev. No brainer.
Happy.
No brainer.
We.
That homegrown
when we
guy.
Talked last week. On the,
homegrown.
Homegrown. To me, you know, we had talked about this last week. Yes, you love your homegrown player. When the fans love the homegrown guy feels like he wants to be here. Get the damn contract signed. And that's what the Mets did. Did they pay him a little bit more than maybe most people thought he would get? Yeah. Cohen's got the money. If it takes an extra $10 million, do it. You know, you've got a fan favorite here. You know, you need a center fielder. There didn't seem to be a center fielder available. It was a perfect fit. Get it done, and they got it done. You got to be thrilled.
Yeah, I thought that was a great signing. Bogaerts going to the Padres. I think the Pod's top four in the lineup is as good as anybody's right now.
Unreal.
You're going to go Tatis, Soto, Machado, Bogaerts 1-4 with Cronenworth coming in fifth. I mean, it's a really good front of the lineup. I thought Chris Bassett going to Toronto, 3-63. Toronto needs pitching. I mean, a little bit older, but they only had to give him 3 years, so it wasn't that bad. The Murphy trade I thought was interesting also. Sean Murphy going to the Braves. So the Braves not sitting pat. You didn't think catcher was the biggest need that they had, but they got an all-star caliber catcher.
They had two all-star catchers last year.
Yeah, I know, and then now they have another one. So there we are. Oakland's just trying to get rid of everybody and just get younger. They're just taking prospect after prospect. Milwaukee got, Milwaukee got players that can play here. So it's going to be interesting to see how that works out for them, because they're not trying to sell out here. They're just trying to see what they can do. I thought the Christian Vasquez signing by the Twins wasn't bad. 3 for 30. Gives him a catcher that you can count on. I mean, I thought he was pretty good in Houston. Obviously, yep. It was a pain in my butt in Boston. So I thought that was an interesting one.
He's a guy that I think catches well enough, and he hits, gives you a little bit with the bat.
But what'd you think about Correa to San Francisco, guys? I mean, that's a lot of years. He's going to be playing until he's 41. Just saying. It's a lot of years.
San Fran was making offers for everybody, it felt like, and they were coming up short in every offer. They finally had to, I guess, go the extra mile to get one of these big guys.
Gee, thoughts?
It's a lot of years. I mean, my problem with this is I just don't see him being the centerpiece of an offense. And I have a problem with him going. I have a problem with the Giants signing him because they don't have a big offense player. So you're putting him right in the middle of that lineup now. And where are the other offensive players that are going to help him?
Where's the protection? I agree.
Nothing. And you just signed him for 13 years.
I mean, he got a lot of money. Bogaerts was 11 years. So it wasn't like it was a short trip because the Padres lost that on every bid too. I thought 11 was a lot. Then all of a sudden I saw 13. I was like, oh my God,
the one thing I didn't see, which I'll have to take a look at, is I don't know how his power translates to San Francisco. So I got to take a look to see what that looks like, because if he's going to only hit 22 home runs on the year, now you're really going to start wondering why you gave him 13 years. And the reason they gave him 13 years is because they want to sign somebody big, and he's the next available free agent up. And the only way you're getting him is if you go higher than everybody else. So we know why, but still, I mean, it's a lot of years. I mean,
the Twins made a massive offer as well. I think that's why they had to up the years, because the Twins made a massive offer to try to keep him. 13 years is a lot of years. Kev?
Yeah, I'm shocked at the length of the contract, especially for these shortstops. You know, Correa, Bogaerts, now, don't forget, Mets are on the hook for 10 years for Lindor. I mean,
yep.
You know, 38 years old, everyday shortstops don't happen every day. Doesn't seem like it's a good gamble.
No, I mean, when you look at it with Bogaerts, right, it's not even like they have a place to move him. I mean, maybe second base eventually. I mean, third base is Machado, and he's there for a while. You know, it's not like you say, okay, he's gotten a little older, and we slide him over. There's not a lot of Derek Jeters that play the same position until he's, 40. That position in particular, because range slips, range, it's the most important range position on the field. Maybe that in center field. I'll match them both up. And range slips there.
And we saw it with Jeter. He slipped in range.
He slips.
If he wasn't Derek Jeter, he would have been moved off shortstop.
Yeah, it's like Cal Ripken's streak.
Yep.
If it wasn't for the streak, he would have been out of the lineup.
Yep.
I'm assuming this means Tatis is now an outfielder.
He's going to be an outfielder.
We're good.
Well, they want to try to protect that shoulder as much as possible with all the slides and dives and stuff. Not that he won't run into a wall and hurt himself for 3 months, but, they're trying to, like, minimize that in the shortstop role. They've already told him he's moving to the outfield because they're going to play, they're pretty well set. Machado's going to stay where he is. Cronenworth's going to move to first now. Most likely Kim's going to play second. The lineup's not awesome on the back end, but the front four are so good, it's going to be interesting to see how people pitch around them and try to get through the beginning of that lineup. The other, San Francisco also signed Manaea, and I was very thankful to get him out of my Padre organization.
Yeah, but after that big year last year.
Where does Dansby Swanson end up? I hear the Cubs, but I don't know what anybody else is hearing. Dodgers are in it too, I heard.
Dodgers. That's what I saw last was the Dodgers.
Are the Cubs going to make a move on anybody? I mean, they really haven't, It's kind of funny. It's been the Mets It's been the Yanks. It's been the Phillies. It's really been big market teams except for the Dodgers, you know. But Toronto, you're right. You know, San Francisco just made a huge splash. San Diego a little bit. But it's been, you know, but a lot of those middle-level teams really haven't done crap.
Yeah, surprising. Even Texas, after signing DeGrom, has really done nothing also.
Which surprised me. But, well, they signed 17 shortstops last year. So now they're just trying to move them around the infield and the outfield to make sure that they have it covered. Listen, I'm going to say this right now off the record. Texas is going to be a good team, not just because of the DeGrom thing. Bruce Bochy is going to find a way to make that team competitive, in my opinion. I just think he's that kind of manager that makes – he made the Padres pretty good. He made the Giants really good. I think Bochy's the kind of guy that will max out the players, and they like him. I think it'll be really I think it'll be a good thing in that respect.
There'll be a similar impact to Buck on the Mets.
I agree. I think they're the same. I'm not saying they're the same type of manager. Bochy's a little younger than Buck. Not a lot, a little bit. But I think that they both know how to run a bullpen. I think they both know how to get the max out of their players. I think they both know how to use all the players on their roster. We'll get more into that in the spring. But, you know, I just wanted to say that.
But he's another manager that you feel like if he's managing your team, you will not be outmanaged or outmaneuvered.
And you haven't felt that way about Texas in a very long time.
Yep.
Darren, Yankees. Is Rodon here next week?
I think he has to be. They need it. And the fact that we haven't done anything to address the bullpen still has me scared. Everybody else, I mean, Syndergaard signed today, by the way, with the Dodgers. So the Dodgers got – I actually think it's a good signing. It's a one-year deal. But I think Syndergaard, second year – off. I always like the guy second year off the injury. Usually you see a little bit more from him. But I think Rodon will be a Yankee, and I think he's an important piece for us, Jay.
Yeah. I'm beginning to think that that's going to be the move they're going to have to make.
You can't get away with just re-signing Judge and saying, okay, everything's fixed, because you didn't win it last year. And a lot of things went right the first half of the year last year. It wasn't like they collapsed. It was just that they were unbelievably efficient in the early part of the year last year. Everything went right. Everybody pitched great. Everybody hit. Everybody was part of it. That doesn't happen, you know, I mean, on a normal basis. So they need more pitching, and it was pretty evident.
I think we're going to see both of the kids up here, specifically in spring training. I mean, definitely in spring training, but I think you're going to see both of the shortstops up here. And I think you may see one of them play second base to start. I don't know what they want to do with Gleyber Torres yet. And maybe that's the guy that they dangled to try to get another bullpen arm or a starter. Or an outfielder, but you know, I think that's the move they're going to make. The only other guy that's out there right now, as far as outfielders, is if they want to bring back Benintendi,
yeah,
or they go for Brantley.
And Brantley fits the Yankee mold of another guy that will be better off at DH at this stage of his career.
Yeah, that's
I mean, you know, it's like, you know, listen, Michael Brantley's a nice hitter. He's a nice player. Always would have liked him on my team. Don't get me wrong. But the DH position is becoming really filled up on the Yankee roster a little bit. And it's not something that's needed. I think the Gleyber trade is something that has to happen now. I like Gleyber. I think other teams might like him too. But I mean, trading him off a couple of years ago as opposed to now, probably a little bloom off the rose. He didn't have a great year last year. But I think it's a move that the Yanks have to make.
Well, between Gleyber, Peraza, and Volpe, you know, one of those guys, the chances are, I think at this point, one of those guys isn't here when we start the season. And it could be one of the kids. I mean, if you really believe in Torres, it could be one of the kids. But I think one of those guys is not here as we start the season. And that's where an outfielder or an arm comes in, and that's how they do it. But I agree. I think we're going to see Carlos Rodon. I'm hoping we're going to see Carlos Rodon here too. So
yeah, the one thing is, and I'm saying it selfishly, I really want to see Volpe play. I nothing against the other two guys, but for some reason I've read enough about Volpe where I want him to be on my team. I might be wrong. Maybe he gets the most though, and that's why you have to deal him.
Homegrown kid.
I love my homegrown guys. I do. I want my homegrown guys, my Aaron Judge. I want him. I didn't like the Yankees as much as when we were trying to buy the pennants. I liked it when we started off in 96, where we bought Mariano Duncan. We play today, we win today. That was my kind of guy. That's the guy we buy, a mid-level guy. But, okay. Yeah, I mean, I think that baseball is it's a lot of stuff happening every week, which makes it really cool.
Let's touch on the World Cup. So we have our two finalists. It's Argentina and France. Both teams played good games today to get to the finals. Should be a good game yesterday and today. Should be a good game coming Saturday, right?
Yep.
You guys want to add anything on this?
Well, I watched both games. I was home, so I was able to sit in front of the TV. Yesterday, Argentina dominated Croatia. That game was not close. Messi scored the penalty in the first half.
Hate Messi.
Yeah, I know. Hate Messi. And then the third goal.
I really hate Mbappe, so we're even.
And the third goal was a beautiful play by Messi to set up. I can't remember the guy's name who scored the two goals. Doesn't matter.
It just doesn't matter.
But, you know, I thought that they dominated Croatia. Today's game, France wins 2-0 or 2-0. Let's make sure we do the right verbiage. France got that early goal, 5th minute. And I think that helped draw Morocco out of what felt like they were playing a more defensive structure throughout the World Cup. And I thought they were very aggressive. I thought Morocco played a very good game for them. They just ran up against a better team. And France did enough to advance. They got the late goal to give them the breathing room so that it wasn't a frantic finish. And sets up, you know, when you look at the semifinals, everybody wanted Argentina-France. And that's what you get in Sunday morning.
That's what we posted. We were like, hey, is Morocco going to ruin the final we want to see?
The scorer for Argentina, by the way, was Julian Alvarez.
Thank you.
I mean, the thing is, my only World Cup points, I mean, because you covered everything that we need, it's time. It's time for the two referees on the field. If hockey could do it, enough of this crap with one guy running up and down. You know, some of these referees have no control of the game. Gets put.
Listen,
there was the two games that were played the last 2 days were nice, but the weekend games, all four were great. Harry Kane has a chance to tie this game on his foot. Best play, you send your best guy up there, and he misses. It's stunning, right? The Dutch tie it with 90 plus 11.
Oh,
90 plus 11.
That was incredible. Awesome.
It was a great play.
It was a great play.
And he rolled it in, and the guy, Weghorst, came in. He didn't come into like the 80th minute. He scored both goals. I mean, I didn't know who he was. He scored two goals. I was like, whoa, that was amazing. Then, so that game, you know, goes in. Argentina game was exciting. Croatia game. All four teams had exciting games in the semifinal. Everything was coming down to the wire in all those games. It was really well played. It was fun. Morocco, Portugal, even though
that was excellent.
I mean, it was, you know, Morocco was just killing everything off. Portugal couldn't do anything.
Yeah.
And, you know, you got to realize that there's some stars we're not going to see next time. All right. This is probably Messi's last run. Obviously, Ronaldo's last run. They're not even starting him the last two games. Right, so you're seeing aging guys. There was aging guys on Great Britain. Giroud is probably done after this one in France. He's been their leading goal scorer in history. You know, so I mean, you'll see Mbappe for the next three, but you're not going to see Giroud anymore. You know, you're going to see a changing of the guard in some of these powerhouses. You know, I think we have one more year with Neymar. I mean, but the way Croatia came back on them was amazing. That was. I mean, both teams scoring an extra time. I mean, I thought the quarterfinal four matchups were unbelievable.
They were. They were really good games then.
It was great soccer. Now, the negative is the guy doing the Argentina-Netherlands game, the ref there, horrendous.
Oh, terrible.
No control over the game at all. Time for two refs, guys. Time for two refs and two linesmen. Enough. It's getting to be ridiculous. I don't know. Why soccer? I mean, the VAR, finally, it took forever to sit there and do the check on the goals, but it works somewhat. I just don't understand how it's happening the other way. It throws me off that soccer can't figure out that we need to. That field is huge. And, you know, they kick a long ball, and this one guy running down there, like, has to be in better shape than the players to stay on the whole time. It's like, come on, enough. He can't see everything. He can't miss anything. And let's get a little bit more serious with the flopping. I mean, Messi's the best player in the world. He flops more than anyone I've ever seen in my life. He slows down, he falls, hurt, then they get the ball back, and he's up and he's running, you know, whatever. I mean, there's got to be some penalties on the flopping.
Neymar does a pretty good job of that, too.
Oh, no doubt about it. I'm not saying he doesn't. And I like Messi much more than Gino does. I like Messi a lot. I saw him falling all over the place the other day. And I was like, oh, God.
But Messi's 5'7", 150 pounds. I mean, come on.
I'm not disagreeing with you, but these guys fall down at the drop of a hat. So then when somebody's really seriously hurt, like Pulisic was in the goal, you're like, is he just faking it? No, he scored the goal and he's just laying there because he has a pelvic contusion. It just sounded awful.
Yeah.
But I just want to see, you know, I mean, it's going to be really great in 26. It's going to be here. Be a great bucket list thing to actually go to a World Cup game, whether the U.S. are playing or not. I'd probably like to see one. I know that they'll use New Jersey. MetLife is probably one of the stadiums. I'd love to catch a game there just because it would be something amazing. Even if I'm watching Uruguay play Austria, it doesn't really freaking matter to me. I just would want to go there and listen to everybody sing and say I was at a World Cup match. But I just think that it's very antiquated, this one referee for the whole field thing. Yeah. Hockey was smart enough to do it. At first, I was like, is that going to work? It works fine. Soccer can figure it out, too.
I didn't really give it a lot of thought until you brought it up. And I got to tell you, I think you're right. Because the way these guys are moving now, the ref has such a hard time seeing everything and keeping up to begin with. And now that you've implemented the VAR, why not have another ref on the field? It just, I agree with you. I think it needs
four guys. To I'm not asking for a lot. Four guys instead of three. That's all.
Maybe we need to write to FIFA.
Why not? If we put a $20 bill in there, they might look at it.
Post it on Twitter. Maybe we could start a trend here.
I know soccer purists are probably hating me right now, but just watching it and watching how many things are missed and how many things are overdone. Come on, let's just get these guys some help. I don't need an old 55-year-old guy trying to run with a bunch of these kids saying, yeah, I saw it. You didn't see shit. Stop it. Anyway, I'm looking forward to the final. Let's make our picks right now while we're here. Let's do it. Kev, who wins?
Argentina 3-2.
G?
France 2-1. I hate Messi.
I'm going to take Argentina in kicks. I think it's going to be 2-2 and goes to kicks. Argentina wins. I think it's a really good final. I think it's one of the better finals we've seen in a while.
Yep.
So it should be a lot of fun. Gino hates Messi, and we move on. Go ahead, G.
By the way, I do think he is the greatest player in the world. I do think that. I just can't stand him.
Mbappe is not that far behind, by the way. Neither is Neymar. They're all really – it's a close – not even Modric, we're not going to see him in 4 years. He's 37, you know, and he's – I mean, he's great, you know.
Oh, he's great.
Controlling the ball for Croatia and two straight semifinals. Freaking ridiculous. Anyway, sorry.
Okay. You want to hit the NHL?
We have college football, college basketball, and NHL, and a little. So I will.
College football, brother.
Okay, let's start with football here. Let's go Army Navy right here. Listen, I love this. I love this matchup. Love this game. It's always exciting. I know Kev's got a bone to pick at the end of this when I'm done. This was not exactly a thrilling offensive game. Army scored their touchdown in the regulation on a block punt. Navy had a fullback dive that went for 77 yards. That was it. Outside of that, there really wasn't much. Total offense, Army had under 200 yards. Navy had under 300 yards. And then each team scored on the first play of overtime. You know, Navy with their only completion of the day at the time. And Army on a long run. Army was able to hold off on a fumble inside the one that Navy fumbled the ball. Army recovered, kicked the field goal, and won the game. But the pageantry and watching these guys, it was just amazing. The firing of the Navy coach, which you're going to get into, is a disgrace. But just fun football, what it's all about. Just the purity of the game, that of guys that are going to give their next 5 years to protect us. So, Kev, on you.
Yeah, this game, the Navy quarterback, Xavier Arline, Wading River kid, at Long Island. I know my nieces know him from the school district, say he's a really great kid. And of course, he's going to the Navy. I mean, any of these service academies guys are 99.99% of them are great kids.
Absolutely. They get vetted so hard to get in. It's ridiculous.
Yep. When Army, Navy are not good teams, and they're very mediocre this year, when they're not good teams, it makes the game a little harder to watch if you like football, because they both run the triple option. They both see it every day in practice. They are so used to it, they know how to defend it. And that makes the offense a little bit of a slog. Darren?
Yeah, the only point I'll make is you got to remember that these guys are service guys, right? So they all have to do everything. So the offensive linemen aren't a bunch of 320-pound guys. They can't sustain blocks for long. That's why they have to run the triple option. Or if you happen to ever watch the movie We Are Marshall, the version of the Veer, because that's these offenses are designed for offensive lines that can't maintain big blocks against big teams. Sorry, Kev.
No, you're right. And when they go up, you know, when you've got when they're facing another team and the other team only has a week to prepare for this option offense, which they only see once a year, you can sneak up on teams. You can pull off the upset. But when you've got the two teams that know exactly what the other team is going to run.
And the two coaches are friends, and they're on the same staff. They do the same thing.
Yeah. So it becomes who makes one more play than the other team? Who makes one less mistake? That being said, apparently right after the game, the Navy AD comes up to Coach Ken Niumatalolo.
Yeah, I wasn't going to say it. I said Navy coach because
I figured give it a shot. Okay. Fired immediately after the game. This is the winningest coach in Navy history. He's 109-83. A little tough the last 3 years, 11-23 combined. 2020 COVID year, I take that off. You know,
you have to.
So they're 4-8 the last 2 years. Yeah, they're not that good the last 2 years. And then though they're upset, they're 2-5 against both Army and Air Force the last 7 times they've played. A couple of things I didn't realize: that Navy is actually more strict than Army and Air Force. And Darren, I'm sure you didn't know this either, unless you read it in the articles. Navy guys were not given an extra year of eligibility after COVID. Air Force and Army were. The government requires midshipmen to graduate in 4 years, so there is no redshirting. The classes at Navy end at 3:20. The other two academies end at noon. This got to the point where when they had to move indoors, Navy shares indoor facility with gymnastics. They don't have the high-quality practice facilities. They have 22 starters returning next year. Given what this coach has done for this team and how good Navy has been for a long time under Coach Ken, he deserves another year with everybody back. He had 1 year left on his contract. Fire this guy. I don't think he did anything wrong. I think it's awful that he got fired. Darren?
Yeah, the only thing I knew about was the 4 years and that they didn't get the COVID year. I knew those two things. I did not know about the time. I didn't know about what they shared it with. I didn't know any of that stuff. I knew about the 4 year because I thought it was weird. I was like, why? I was like, well, why are they being so tough on these kids? But I guess that's the law. I didn't realize that was the reason. Yeah. Listen, this guy made Navy a powerhouse, okay? He really did. I mean, Johnson started it before he went to Georgia Tech. But he was part of the 14 straight years where they beat Army. All right, he was a major part of it. And what they always say about this game, and for anyone that doesn't watch it or follow it closely, is I don't care if you go 0-11 and beat Navy. That's all we care about. I don't care if you go 0-11 and beat Army. That's all we care about. Yeah. So the fact that he lost to Army, now this will be – and I know he lost to the other service academy. I don't think they care as much about Air Force, not to put it down.
No.
But now they've lost six out of the last 8. Army has won after Navy had won 14 in a row.
Yeah.
They take it seriously. And I think the coach had done some great work there. I think that he really built a great culture. And, You know, you watch a couple of those games and quarterbacks were getting hurt on Navy. They were dealing with a lot of injuries. You know, I don't know. They gave Notre Dame a run this year. I mean, they play everybody tough. They play everybody hard. And I hate to see the coaches go. Listen, when Stan Brock got fired at Army, I understood it. He couldn't win. He couldn't beat Navy or he couldn't beat anybody.
Yeah.
You know, but you know, you sit there and you watch this guy and you're like, Ken probably had offers to go elsewhere and stayed at the academy because of how successful he was, just like Johnson got at Georgia Tech.
Yep.
I just think it's a little bit of a crime that he would lose his job now.
Then we've got bowls coming up. Bowl season starts this week.
Yeah, before we get into the bowls, just want to mention Mike Leach real quick.
I'll do Mike Leach first. Okay.
As the only guy that any of you will ever know that has both a Mississippi State jersey and sweatshirt and a Washington State jersey and sweatshirt, I followed Mike Leach's career for a long time. Career 158 and 107. He was 61 years old, young guy. He was a whack job. Everybody knows it. Definitely an over-the-top personality, talking about dating on the sidelines, talking about, I mean, to the reporters, talking about the importance of Thanksgiving, different things about Christmas, just a little nuts. He was on Hal Mumme's staff. He invented the air raid. All right. Then he brought it to Texas Tech. And at Texas Tech, he was great. He was a coach of the year for the Big 12. Not an easy thing to do. You know, he had a 11 win year there. He went 84-43 at Texas Tech. He kind of got let go at the end. I think there was some sort of like issue that I didn't really understand what happened, but they moved on from him. And he ended up in a beautiful Pullman, Washington, where everybody dreams of going. And he took a very poor program at Washington State that had been brutalized. And he turned that around, and he went 61-47 there, twice Pac-12 Coach of the Year. And then after Dan Mullen left, he got the job at Mississippi State, only 19-17. First year was a struggle. He's kind of built it up the last couple. You know what? He was a personality in a world that lacks personalities now. I mean, you sit there, you watch guys like Nick Saban do press conferences and it puts you to sleep, or Ryan Day or any of these other guys. Yeah, G.
So I'll give you a weird fact.
Okay.
You know Mike Leach wrote a book about the battle tactics of Geronimo?
Absolutely. I did know that. And do you know what sport he played in college?
Rugby.
Rugby at BYU. He was a nut job. But at the same time, he was fun. He was entertaining. He brought a lot of things to the to the college football landscape. And just reading an article today, Lane Kiffin, who's the biggest rival he has, Ole Miss, basically said how much he loved Leach, and he was honored to be part of Leach's last win. Now, he lost the Egg Bowl game to him, which is the biggest thing that they play. Mississippi State, 24-22 final. He goes, I love the fact that they gave him a hug and I got to watch him walk out a winner. Wow. And I thought that was a very classy thing from Lane Kiffin today. From two universities that generally don't like each other. But the respect that people had for Leach, and he's kind of like Andy Reid, not to that level, but with that ingenuitive mind of coming up with weird things to do offensively. And I just thought that, it's a shame. 61, way too young for Mike Leach, and college football misses out on a really great, great coach and a great man.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned Reed. You know, here's Reed with his Denny's menu type of looking play sheet, and Mike Leach had like an index card.
Yes, Mike Leach is nuts. If you ever watch any excerpts on Mike Leach, you'll laugh your butt off. That's all I'll say. He's crazy.
Like you said, 60% winning percentage at the three of the lesser schools in state.
Well, none of them are a power in their conference at all.
Yeah. He's in Texas Tech. He's in Washington State and Mississippi State. But the legacy lives on, the coaching tree. You've got Cliff Kingsbury in the NFL. You've got Sonny Dykes, who's TCU. Or the college football playoffs. He's got Josh Heupel in Tennessee. He's got Lincoln Riley, who's at USC, was at Oklahoma for a while. And many others. Yeah, but those were some of the big names that the coaching tree is going to be there for a long time. His influence is going to be felt with that offense he ran.
I agree. It just Just a shame. I heard he got sick. I didn't think I'd hear he was dying. I was in the sales meeting, and just as soon as I got out of the meeting, I just looked up. I was like, oh my God, Mike Leach is dead, 61. Just a little crazy.
Yep.
And you were talking about bowls. Go ahead, Kev.
Yeah, we're gonna post in the morning of the games. You know what our predictions are. But I know this weekend it kicks off Friday night. You've got the Duluth Trading Cure Bowl, which is actually going to be a pretty good, decent game. It's the 25th ranked University of Texas San Antonio versus the 24th ranked Troy. Two smaller schools, smaller conferences, but that should be a very entertaining game. A couple other games this weekend. You got Cincy Louisville. You've got Washington State, Fresno State. One of the big problems I have, and Darren, maybe you have a similar thought. When you're getting ready for these bowl games and you start looking at the teams and the squads, how many players are not going to be there between all the ones that enter the transfer protocol, the ones who declare for the draft, the ones who opt out of playing? You look, and I know I'm going to use the Gamecocks as an example.
Shocking.
I know, shocking. Leading rusher, Marshawn Lloyd, transfer protocol. He's in I think we went to Florida State.
The transfer portal.
Yeah, not protocol.
Well, you
Jaheim
know,
Bell, their second leading rusher, transferred. Beal Smith, their fourth leading rusher. I think he's a graduate. He's gone. Their tight end, their tight end Stogner, back to Oklahoma. The team they're playing, Notre Dame, they've got Meyer, who declared for the draft. He's not playing. Pine, who started all year at quarterback after coming in game two or three, he's in the transfer portal. It's not like it's the same team that played all year.
And I'll just use an example just right off what you're saying. So Louisville now hires Brohm from Purdue. Now, Brohm was their quarterback. I understand Brohm going home to Louisville. He set records there when he played. So now they have a new coach, a bunch of guys are going to the transfer portal, and now all of a sudden Purdue goes out and hires the defensive coordinator from Illinois. So he doesn't even know the team he's coming in. He's probably not going to coach that specific game, but he'll be part of it. And how many guys are entering the transfer portal because Brohm left? So you're 100% right. I mean, the teams that you're going to watch, that you're going to see more of their regular players, are the Troys, UTSAs. Or North Texas versus Boise State, or Southern Miss versus Rice. These are the bowls that you're going to see the players that are actually playing. You don't know what you're going to see from a lot of them, or the guys that just kind of opt out because they have draft status. Because there's a bunch of those guys as well. Well, I'm not going to risk injury. I can't blame them, but it does take away. But we're going to have 12 bowls between 12-16 and when we do our next show, 12-20. Figure our show is 12-21. There'll be a bowl on 12-21 as well. So there's 12 different games. Most of these are the lesser games. They're not the teams you're looking for. You mentioned the best ones, Louisville, Cincy, Florida, Oregon State, Washington State, Fresno State, maybe BYU, SMU. Those are probably the big four out of these matchups. But, you know, there's good football all the way around. And we're going to post up every day, starting with the Bahamas Bowl and the Cure Bowl on the 16th. On the 17th, we have the Fenway Bowl because the Red Sox always have to copy the Yankees. The Las Vegas Bowl. Somehow the Jimmy Kimmel Bowl, whatever the hell that is. And then the Lending Tree Bowl, the New Mexico Bowl, which has been around for a while, and the Frisco Bowl because Frisco, Texas needed their own bowl. And then we have the Myrtle Beach Bowl, the Potato Bowl, the Blue Field game, you know. Boca Raton Bowl because, you know, the people, the Snowbirds from New York that moved down to Boca, they need their own bowl game. And then the New Orleans Bowl. So those are the ones we're covering. The bigger ones we'll talk about more next week, but we'll just give you updates on these throughout.
I personally miss the San Diego County Credit Union Poinsettia Bowl.
It doesn't get any better than that. I forget what happened to the Sun Bowl. Is that gone? It used to be the Pool and Weed Eater Sun Bowl. Ridiculousness. But yeah, that was my stuff on college football. I just want to get into a little college hoop if that's all right with you guys.
Yep.
Just a couple of quick things, and let me turn to the right page because I'm on the wrong one right now. Here we go. Yes. Okay. College hoops, just give you a quick top five. These are the teams that are playing really, really well right now. Purdue still top of my list. UConn is undefeated 11-0, and Hurley's done an amazing job there. Alabama went into Houston, who hadn't been number one since the Guy Lewis ever. And, you know, so I put them in my top five. I'll keep Houston there because they're still a really good team. And I'll let Tony Bennett's Virginia team be there, be in the top five. Teams on the rise, just a couple. Mississippi State, 10-0 now after they won tonight, including wins over Marquette and Utah. So they're playing well. Arizona State, 10-1, wins over Michigan, Colorado, Creighton. So good job by them. New Mexico, 10-0, with wins over SMU and St. Mary's. The one thing is, and it's early, but you look at the Mountain West, right, which seems like, you know, one of those, you know, mid-major kind of – better of the mid-major kind of conferences. You have New Mexico undefeated, you know, and playing really, really well. You have UNLV undefeated and playing really, really well. San Diego State's probably the class of that league. Boise State has one loss. Colorado State's playing well. So, and my dog decided to visit for some stupid reason. So there's a lot of good teams in the Mountain West. It's going to be a little bit of a wild league this year. Wyoming, who was a preseason team people liked, is 5-5. So we'll see what happens to them. Their center's been out all year. So the Mountain West is one of those conferences we're going to keep an eye on because teams are getting off to good starts there. Teams under the radar. Utah State's the other one, also undefeated, 9-0. Teams under the radar. Utah State at 9-0. Kansas State 9-1. Everybody left but two guys when they hired Tang. So that it's all transfers and freshmen. Not a lot of freshmen either, mostly transfers. 9-1. Southern Miss 9-1. Not a team you usually count on. And UNLV, as I mentioned earlier, 10-0. Team of the week I gave to Alabama because they won at Houston, and I thought that was just a great win. A couple teams tumbling a bit just to keep an eye on. Let's see, because I turned the wrong page. Rutgers lost to Seton Hall after losing a game they shouldn't have lost, and the Big Ten admitted that they made an error in the Ohio State miracle three-pointer at the buzzer. Creighton, who was ranked seventh a couple of weeks ago, is stumbling. They're like 6-5 now. Indiana's lost a couple. Illinois has fallen to 7-3. And North Carolina, like you mentioned last week, even though they beat Citadel, still a team that's not ranked anymore. Few games of the week. One was on tonight, by the way. UCLA went into College Park, and they were up 40 on Maryland. They ended up winning by 29 or 27. It wasn't a game ever. It wasn't as close as the 27-point final. That's how bad they wiped the floor with Maryland, who we were talking about a couple weeks ago. But UCLA plays at the Garden this week against Kentucky. It's a big matchup, 16 versus 13. Number 6, Tennessee, heads to Arizona, plays the ninth-seeded Arizona team, ninth-ranked, I should say. Number 14, Indiana, heads to number 8, Kansas. Number 4, Alabama, plays number 15, Gonzaga, on the neutral site in Birmingham. Doesn't seem that neutral to me. And number 23, Ohio State, plays North Carolina, also at the Garden. On Sunday, number 19, Auburn, heads to USC. A couple of quick upsets from last week. Penn State went into Illinois, beat them by 15 on the road. It's a big conference road win for Penn State. Memphis went into Auburn, number 11 at last week. It was in Atlanta, actually, neutral site, I guess. But they beat them by 9. And then BYU in Vegas beat Creighton, who was ranked 21. So that's just kind of a quick rundown on college basketball. I don't know if you guys have any points on anything. I just rambled.
We will have more comments, I think, once these other sports start to wind down.
I know. It's hard to keep up with all this stuff, but I do my best. Gino, back to you.
Any NBA or NHL comments, highlights, anything you want to run before we do the NFL picks for this week?
NHL, you have to mention
the Paul Top Ovechkin. Guy.
Ovechkin, 800th goal last night. Had that hat trick. One behind Howe for second. Gretzky, of course, number one at 894. With that, 18 straight seasons with 20 goals. Only Brendan Shanahan and Gordie Howe have more, a longer streaks. 162nd multi-goal game, only behind Gretzky. And can go on and on. But great career and shows no signs of slowing down yet. No, he's got a real chance of passing Gretzky.
It's funny when I look up and I see every now and again on my feed, I'll see like on Facebook, I'll see a picture of Gordie Howe in a Whalers uniform at 51, still kind of playing. Makes me laugh, makes me smile. Love these guys playing without the helmet. Love it, love it. Ovechkin is a superstar, willing to play physical as well, which I always respected the fact that he did everything that he possibly could for his team. He brought a cup there. He stayed with Washington his entire career. I give him a lot of props. He's done a great job. He's been an amazing player. and more likable than Crosby. We put it that way.
Cindy, yep.
Yep, there we are.
Top five?
Top five. Lead the way, Kev.
Number one, Boston. Mm-hmm. I've got them retaking the top spot. Still 15-0-1 at home. So they're pointing every game at home. Number two, because they've been hot lately, winners of four in a row, points in 15 straight games. They've got the Maple Leafs jumping the Devils to number two. The Devils have lost three in a row. Now, the three good teams, the Islanders, the Rangers, and Dallas Stars. But with a three-game losing streak, I've got them down to three. Vegas holds steady at four. And my first appearance, first time looking at them, the Pittsburgh Penguins I got at number five. They've won six in a row. They're 8-1-1 in their last 10. And starting to get back into the picture here for the playoffs.
I'm going to tell you, Kev, that I had the same exact five in the same exact order. So we'll make it real fast. Go ahead, Jake. You're up.
I have Boston, New Jersey, Toronto, and then I have Winnipeg, and I have Vegas in the 4-5.
I had Winnipeg as my six. I had them just off the top, but I got you. NBA, top five, Kev?
Yep. Boston, still number one. Lost a couple of games last week, but to me, it's a six-game road trip. They went 4-2. That's good enough to hold on to one. Milwaukee stays in at number two. Memphis with six wins in a row. I've got them at number three. The Pelicans at number four. And number five, winners of four in a row, 8-2 in their last 10, have overcome a 1-5 start. They're 16-7 since. I've got the Nets at number five.
It cracks and me up. Me, yeah.
And to me, you could have had Denver, Cleveland, and Phoenix in that mix too. And the Lakers are still 11-16.
Kev, I have the same five, but just in a slightly different order. I have Boston, Milwaukee, New Orleans three, Memphis four, Brooklyn five. I put Cleveland as my six.
Yep.
I have the same as you, only I have Cleveland five and the Nets six. I don't have the Nets quite in the top five yet.
It was close.
The 8-2 last 10 is pretty good, and I think they're moving themselves up, but not yet.
That's the reason why I put them in there as five. They've been a little hotter than the other teams. That's all.
Yep. Yeah, New Orleans have won seven in a row, Memphis six in a row, Brooklyn four in a row. So that's why I went in that order. But, I agree with you.
All right, week 15. Unbelievable that we're at week 15 in the NFL. Notes, just a quick note to all the fantasy football players out there. This is the first week of your fantasy football playoffs. And in two of my three leagues, I am not playing this week because I have buys. Woo!
The other one, you didn't make the playoffs.
I did not make the playoffs in your league. You are correct, sir.
They're not playing any league.
I did.
You have nobody playing.
I did go 13-1 in the other league, though. So
that's awesome, G. Really,
okay, pretty good. Kev, week 15 of the NFL. There's a good slate going on.
Yep.
Why don't you hit us with your first pick?
First pick, and I never pick the Thursday night game. I'm gonna pick it this week. I'm going to take San Fran laying the three at Seattle. San Fran just looks too good right now. They think they're gearing up for the playoff push here. Seattle's been struggling. I know they get Walker back from the injury, but I'll still take San Fran.
It's 3.5, by the way.
Fine. Second game, I've got Carolina. They're undefeated at home under Wilkes. They're playing Pittsburgh. I think they're giving up three at home. I'll take Carolina minus the three. In the third game, I'm going to the flex game. This is going to be a nip-and-tuck game. It was tied 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, wherever the however long ago it was. Giants are getting 4.5 at Washington. I wouldn't be surprised if Washington wins by a field goal. I wouldn't be surprised if the Giants win by a field goal. But to me, that's less than 4.5, so I'll take the Giants plus the points. Okay. Those are my three picks.
Thanks, I appreciate that.
No problem. Your Commanders are in good shape.
I'm going to agree with you on my first pick. I love San Francisco this week. Short week. I think they're hot. They continue staying hot. There's literally no travel for them. All they're doing is going up the coast. I like San Francisco in my first game. My second game is Cincinnati. I like the Bengals minus the 2.5 against Tampa. I think Cincinnati is just rolling right now, and I think Tampa is ready to take another beating. I could see this one being ugly as we get to the end of the first half. That's my second game. And my third game, I'm going to the Cowboys. Unbelievable that I'm picking them in week 15, but the Cowboys -4.5 against Jacksonville. Listen, we saw last week against the Texans, they may not blow people out, but their defense is good enough that they're going to pull a lot of these games out. I like Dallas -4.5. Darren, to you.
I'm going to start off with the same team you just picked. I like Dallas as my best bet here. I like them -4.5. I think that they're just a little too physical for Jacksonville on the line of scrimmage on both sides. They didn't play great last week, so hopefully they come out fired up. If they play like they did last week, they'll actually lose the game. My second pick is a team I never like to take in this thing. I'm taking the Jets. The fact that we're laying one at home, I think we're better than Detroit, and I think we win the game. I'm going to take the Jets -1. My third pick is Tennessee +3 against the Chargers, and I'm not taking it just because I want the Chargers to lose. I just think that Tennessee will run the ball well, and the Chargers are a good Jekyll and Hyde team that you just never know what to expect. When you think they're going to win, they lose. When you think you're going to lose, they win. I picked them last week, and they won for me. Now I'm picking against them this week. Let's see what happens. I actually think that Seattle's going to give San Francisco fits tomorrow, guys. I honestly think that Purdy hasn't played a road game yet, and this is going to be a very loud stadium to play your first road game. I'm not saying that they're going to win. I'm not saying San Francisco won't cover it. I think that you're going to – I don't think it's going to be as ugly as it seems early. I don't think Geno will have a big game. I just don't know how big a game Purdy will have, and the loss of Deebo Samuel will be a factor for San Francisco's offense because I think he's that good a player and he's the best weapon on that team.
Deebo but Samuel from?
What?
Deebo what? Samuel from?
He is a Gamecock. University of South Carolina.
My son just came downstairs. I had to say that for him.
All right.
I got two parlays for you. One is a favorite parlay, and it is a five team. It is Kansas City, Dallas, Philadelphia, Minnesota, Buffalo money line at +306. And then I got the three team underdog parlay. It's Baltimore, Atlanta, and Tennessee on the money line. Take those three on the money line, put them in a parlay, and it's +1386.
That's awesome.
Wow.
It's a big one.
That's a huge one.
You like Darren, you like Tennessee this week?
The Atlanta-New Orleans game's a toss-up, and Baltimore, you know, it depends. If Huntley plays, it's a game.
So those are the two parlays I got for this week. That concludes week 15 with our picks, guys.
Yeah, we haven't been great, so don't
yeah,
don't count on these things to come through. But we'll see what happens. Okay. Anything else, Kev?
Yeah, I wanted to mention it last week. We ran long. I was gonna mention it this week. We were running long again, so I figured I might as well bring it up. Last week, RIP to Mills Lane. A couple of us who remembered watching boxing in the 80s and 90s. He seemed like he was in every big championship fight. He refereed over 100 of them. He was a referee for Holyfield Tyson 2, which, of course, is known for
the ear.
Tyson bite the ear. He had his own court show with Judge Mills Lane. He was on Celebrity Deathmatch on MTV. Let's get it on. Mills Lane, best boxing referee.
Yeah, all right, I'll say one thing. The most memorable match I ever saw, besides the Tyson Holyfield, obviously, was when Michael Mora was fighting Francois Botha. And Atlas is in the corner of Mora. So, I mean, and Atlas was just pulling every antic he had. Gets the phone out in the middle of the end of the fourth round. Just son on the phone. Wants to know why his dad doesn't want to be champ anymore. Then he takes away the stool the next round. We'll let him sit. Then the next round, he actually takes Mora over to Mills Lane in between rounds and says, I'll tell this man to stop the fight if you don't start fighting. Now, Mora wasn't getting blown out in this fight. He just wasn't doing what Atlas wanted. And Mills Lane's face of stun, of like, what is going on here, is one of those priceless things. Again, you know, he was just an amazing official. He controlled the ring better than a lot of these guys do. And it is, you know, he was one of the best that ever did it. And really a thrill and an honor getting to watch him referee matches because he was that good. Yep. Boom, boom. Tetsu knows twice, give you the thumbs up, and he was ready to roll.
Rest in peace.
Rest in peace, Mills. Absolutely. Anything else, G?
That's it. I'm good, baby.
Kep?
That's it.
All right. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Darren. I'm here with Gino, Kevin, talking about the world of sports, trying to cover everything that we possibly can, or at least have a little bit of knowledge on. If you have any questions, concerns, cries of hysteria, please reach out. Let us know what you're thinking on Facebook, Instagram, whatever you can think of. You can download the show anywhere you can download your podcast. So whether it's an Apple product, Spotify, TuneIn, or any of the others, even say it on Alexa, play the Sports Kings from Queens, and you hear our magical voices. Very exciting. My wife made fun of me for that. She wasn't really. She was actually genuinely excited for me, but I thought I was being mocked, but she's telling me I'm just being a jerk. Anyway, any questions, please contribute with us, talk with us. Let us know what you want to talk about. We love doing the show. We hope you guys love listening. So, without further ado, may the sports be with you.
This has been the Sports Kings from Queens.